because the defense for the Panthers was so tight. But some people are saying the best defense they've ever seen. John Elway saying that. You can't really say it's not true. They were so tight. Von Miller was just a monster. Here's a little bit about the game from NFL.com.
Anniversary of the Super Bowl. There are the old Super Bowl MVPs. Very cool in pregame. Peyton Manning, who won that honor 9 years ago, would it be his last game? Maybe. What about the NBA MVP? Steph Curry. He pounded Cam, the newly minted MVP. Couldn't get it going. Down 3-0 after Denver kicked a field goal in the opening drive. Von Miller made his presence felt right away.
Hey, Steve Mariucci said that the right tackle was going to be a factor in this game. Von Miller made his presence felt early in this game and off. Oh, look look at how he got to Cam. We were all talking about bringing Cam down. I mean, he didn't help you. Strip the ball, sack, touchdown.
We watch a lot of guys with a quick first step. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone with that quick of a first step.
That was Malik Jackson with the score for Denver. But how about Cody Ealy, the game he had today? His first career interception, and Peyton Manning has now thrown a pick in all four Super Bowls in which he's played. That ties his boss, John Elway, for the dubious honor.
Oh, come on, Cody, we didn't want a football game. That was a great play by the defense right there.
Let's pick it up, 16-7 in the third. Overshoots Ted Ginn, and T.J. Ward, he loses it. However, the Broncos do recover. That secondary was outstanding on this day.
It was the turnovers that really hit the Carolina Panthers, and Denver called those turnovers, and we're not just mistakes.
Still down 9, it's Coney Ealy again with the strip sack. Carolina recovers. Ealy tied a Super Bowl record with 3 sacks on this day, and Carolina, oh so sluggish, the number one scoring offense in the league, has the ball at midfield. As you saw, there comes Ealy through. Manning did not have a great statistical day at all. However, he certainly has his defense to thank. And now Cam trying to do his work. And it's tipped away. Bradley Roby.
Bradley Roby played a phenomenal game. Deion always talks about if kid was on any other team, he'd be the number one starting corner.
So Carolina settled for a field goal to get it within 6. And then this is the play that sealed it for Denver. Another strip by Von Miller. T.J. Ward recovers.
Great play by Von Miller. And I'm a little bit confused.
So ain't nobody going to say that.
Not diving for that football right there.
So we going to play like we ain't see that.
So that is 2011 draft class crime on 2011 draft class crime right there. The 1-2 picks overall. And the Broncos managed to get this thing. At this point, they had not scored an offensive touchdown. No Super Bowl winner has never scored an offensive touchdown. But then Manning overshoots Demaryius Thomas. However, we have defensive holding on Josh Norman.
Hey, Irv. Josh, bad hole there, but you got to talk to Demaryius, man. You got to fit the 88 club it out.
Boy, right now, he's a champion. That's all he's thinking about. Doesn't matter how rocky the water are. How out the waters was, they got the ship in.
Then C.J. Anderson punches it in, grew up in nearby Vallejo, California, went to Cal, and that'll seal it for Peyton and the crew. They get the two-point conversion as well. Eli, be happy for your big bro.
That's Cooper right there. I'm saying that about Cooper Cliff.
All right, so that was the, I guess, that's what that's what you have to settle for play-by-play these days. But it was a defensive match. The Broncos came down and kicked the ball first. They were moving the ball pretty well, and then they had to settle for a field goal. Then they got a defensive touchdown, and then they're up, 10-0? It was a great game. I don't know how else to describe it. You're always waiting for one of these quarterbacks to break out. Peyton had a couple of nice long completions, 10, 20 yards. Cam Newton had a 20 or 30 yard completion. But, I mean, there was not a lot out there. And somebody this morning told me that Cam looked like he had deer in the headlight eyes, that he was so overwhelmed by the defense. He didn't see anything like that this year, and that's one of the problems with winning all your games or almost all your games is you may not be you may not go through it. But here's a little bit more from ESPN on the game, talking about the defensive struggle.
This was Wade Phillips and the Denver Broncos defense game. What did you see in this thing?
Without a doubt, John, this was an historic type defensive performance by the Denver Broncos, completely dominating from the opening whistle on. Their ability, we're going to talk a lot about the sacks, as we should, the forced turnovers, but their ability to control the interior of the defensive line, get off blocks, not allow Carolina to ever get an inside run game going, really neutralize their offense. It took away their play action pass. It forced them on the perimeter, and it forced them into a frenetic type style of play. You know, Denver's defense, both inside, outside on the edges, obviously, and in the secondary, was as good as I've seen in a Super Bowl since I played in one in 2000 with the Baltimore Ravens.
Did they do anything fundamentally different than any other teams have tried, or did they just do it better?
I think they just did it better. They matched up very well. Again, Wade Phillips came up with some nuance in the scheme, change up here or there, just to throw Carolina off a little bit. But this was fundamental football. This was guys holding their gaps well, getting off blocks, pursuing, playing with great speed. They were relentless all over the football field. Lots to be said on defense for just effort. I thought the effort was incredible. You watch the end of plays, and when a tackle was being made or sack was being made, there were four, five, six other Broncos showing up to add on. It was pretty spectacular to watch. A lot of people are going to talk about this as a bad football game. I think great defenses make football games bad sometimes. They ruin offenses. They don't make it real appealing to the eyes. But if you appreciate hard hitting, relentless pursuit, great effort, then you appreciate this Super Bowl.
And so it was, and I didn't really expect this game personally, but I mean, you know, if you look how the Broncos treated Tom Brady, maybe I should have, if it was going to fall out this way, you know, you knew it wasn't going to be high scoring from Peyton. He just doesn't really have the mobility or the arm strength anymore. He just kind of looks broken down. And so they say that basically his transition from the beginning to the season to the end was such that he had to go through that period of being out of the game to watch how good the defense was, to understand that he could trust them and he didn't have to go out and try to micromanage the, you know, he didn't have to go out and win that game with his arm. There was a lot of criticism on Cam Newton's failure to jump on a fumble. Now, he was the one who had fumbled the ball. It was knocked out of his hand. I really don't know. Honestly, I don't know if it would have made any difference in the game. But I think what people were saying is that the ball was on the ground. They gave up the ball and scored not too long after that. And that was a fumble that you had to go after. So here's a little bit from Peyton Manning's post-game interview. I mean, immediately after the game, out on the field.
Down to you.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim. And Peyton is feeling right now your second Super Bowl. But what a season it was for you to get this win today. What does that mean?
Well, it's very special, Tracy. This game was much like this season has been. It really tested our toughness, our resilience, our unselfishness. And so it's only fitting it kind of turned out that way. And great bunch of teammates, great bunch of guys I got to play with. And I just feel very, very grateful.
You mentioned this season, but does this win make you think about all the seasons you've had and just all the successes and what a career it's been? Do you reflect on that right now at this moment?
Sure, you certainly do. fries, and of course you get asked a lot of questions, and you reflect about on all the coaches and family members and friends that have helped you get to a Super Bowl, get to this point. So I'm very grateful. I've taken the time to call those people, tell them that I appreciate their support, and obviously it's very special to cap it off with a Super Bowl championship.
So Peyton, is this your final game for your career?
You know, I'll take some time to reflect. I got a couple of priorities first. I want to go kiss my wife and my kids. I want to go, you know, hug my family. I'm going to drink a lot of Budweiser tonight, Tracy. I promise you that. And so I'm going to take care of those things first. And definitely going to say a little prayer and thank the man upstairs for this great opportunity. And I'm just very grateful.
Go do it. Enjoy it. Congratulations.
Thank you, Tracy.
Well, they say that he didn't have any kind of a deal with Budweiser, which is kind of strange because he mentions Budweiser a second time, and it's kind of weird, you know. I get maybe he's a fan of Budweiser. If so, you know, are there no microbreweries around Broncos Stadium that he's friendly with? Now, I'm trying to find Cam's post-game interview, which was, they have, I guess they're saying that that he walked out on the press. You know, I mean, you know, let's face it, he's not the most mature guy. He's still young. And, but so he left. Well, I'll come back and play that for you. Here's Lady Gaga, who is Lady Gaga here. That was I thought she kind of looked like a guy. I'd never really seen her up close, but she looked fairly feminine. She looked kind of a lizard with these red outfit and these red eyes, but. Let me see if I can get a little bit of her. I'm looking for something here for you so you can hear a little bit of her her national anthem. Here we go. Hold on a second.
Time Grammy winner, Lady Gaga.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, all the ramparts we watched were so gallantly.
All right, so I've got Cam Newton's post-game interview, if you want to call it that. I mean, it was just absolutely – I don't even know if it was necessarily disrespectful. It was childish, really. I mean, it just seemed absolutely ridiculous. Here, all right, so he's wearing a hoodie. I mean, you kind of expect these guys to wear a suit and a tie, but he's just wearing a Panthers hoodie, and you can't really hear the questions too much. But anyway, check this out. A lot of criticism of Newton out there for this. We'll be back, he said.
Ron said Denver 2 years ago had a tough time. They bounced back. If you take that to heart, we will get it.
Did you put a figure on what you
got to play it, bro.
Raving Denver did defensively. That, I mean, I know you've seen them, study them. Pretty much what you've seen on film. Raving different things they put in for the game.
Nothing different.
Agonizing. He doesn't really say anything, just a few words. I mean, I understand it, and I mean, I'm sure everybody does. You just lost the Super Bowl that you were favored to win, and you won the MVP, and you didn't do a very good job. But I mean, at the same time, you can't, in my opinion, you can't. You're famous. You're a household word. You're making tons of money. You're the face of a franchise. You can't just throw a little tantrum or you can't do that. It's just a game, ultimately. I mean, anyway, here is Deion Sanders on Cam after the game.
Talk to Cam right now. I mean, listen, we get it. He just lost the Super Bowl. He did not play well.
Hold on a second, Chris, because they've never been through this. I've been on that podium in that very same seat. It's tough. It's hard. When I look back at how I handled it, I promise to never be that person again. And Cam is going to learn from this. It's part of the growth in how you mature as a, not just as a person, but definitely as an athlete. And for some people, just like me, just like Cam, losing is hard. You can speak volumes to, you can go talk to whoever you want until you've lost this game and sat on that stage and had those feelings in you. You have no idea what that feels like to get peppered with questions about how you played, how your team played, what coulda, shoulda, woulda. And talking to Cam right now does no good. When Cam watches this, he's going to learn from it. Well, I hope so. And Marshall, you're right. I've never lost in a Super Bowl.
That was Marshall Faulk. And here is Michael Irvin from the Cowboy previous Cowboy receiver, the great Michael Irvin.
So I can't empathize, but I will say this here. You know, you stand up there and you take the great when it's good. You have to deal with it when it's bad, especially the quarterback. Now, me as a wide receiver, I've openly said I've lost a regular season game. Got in my car with my uniform on and just went straight home. I was so hurt and upset, and I am a poor loser. But I want and I hope. And I always say sometimes our greatest promise lies within our greatest pain. Cam is feeling a great pain right now, and maybe he can turn it around and get back to this game and produce his great promise.
Something that happened last night was very profound. Not only the guys that inducted to the Hall of Fame, Cam received NFL MVP. Do you understand what that means? You're the most valuable player, the yep. most valuable person, the most valuable individual that we have in our league. You are the face of our brand right now. You can't do that.
Andrew,
I understand the emotions of losing, but you can't do that. A Manning, a Brady, all these guys that have been the prototypical type of quarterback in our game, they're not going to do that. Would Drew Brees ever?
But Cam is not them.
Okay. He's not them, but.
I'm going to say this, Prime. Cam is
can't
not
do that,
them.
Marsh.
And nobody says you have to accept losing.
No, we're not even accepting losing.
I'm saying.
Well, you get the point there. I mean, it's kind of what I was saying that, I mean, look, Cam Newton got in trouble with a lot of people this year because the way that he celebrated his touchdowns and wins was so over the top. The dances, the doing the dab, you know, dancing around in people's faces, doing, you know, lengthy dances and celebrations and stuff. And yes, he did give a lot of balls to little kids. I mean, I give him props for that. But if you're going to celebrate like that when you win, you got to take it when you lose. You can't. So anyway, I don't think these guys are going to be back. I don't think I don't have a crystal ball, but I think this game's loss might affect the Panthers in a way. I mean, you know, Cam's got to get over this. Anyway, we'll come back maybe with a few more highlights for your headlines. New Hampshire poll, Trump 21, Sanders 16. I do have highlights out of that. I do have highlights out of that debate, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I'm telling you, I've got like 20 clips. I couldn't even play them all in 2 hours of Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio turned into a robot. It was one of the scariest things that I've ever seen. We're going to get into that. More headlines. U.S. schools flooded with foreign students. When you see community organizers showing up in small towns across the United States, like these politicians show up in our county to run for office, these people show up out of nowhere and they help to bring in these to a large extent. We're not just talking about people from the southern border. We're talking about Muslims, third world Muslims that have no experience with democracy, feminism, human rights, rule of law, fill in the blank. And these people are being placed across the United States. It is something that cannot possibly be on accident. And the intention cannot possibly be to keep the United States for what it used to be. And it's a very sad, it's a very scary thing to watch. It is 6:35. And today is the 8th. Let me get you your temperature here. I got 35 degrees. It was a little bit warmer last night. It was real nice. And we're going to listen to Little Feet, the famous band called Little Feet with Lowell George, probably the greatest band in the world at the time that they were around. But kind of blues, rock, etc. Anyway, we'll take a break at 6:35 and come back, and I'm going to see if there's anything else about the Super Bowl. You could go on, but it was a massive win for Peyton Manning. It is puts a crown on his entire career. To go out a winner like that was amazing, and we'll be back. Well, let's get into the debate, okay? We'll be right back. Thank you. It's about 35 degrees outside, and it is 6:45, 2:3, 14:50. And I've got this little clip here from you from Rubio that was just, I mean, you know, it was, I don't know. I mean, I've never really seen anything like this. I mean, it suggests to me that Marco Rubio is using way too much input from these people and from these experts. This is what he said repeatedly, even when he was called out on it. It was weird, you know. It was just a very strange thing. And it, you know, when you see Marco Rubio on stage, and this debate happened, I guess Saturday night, was it Friday or Saturday? He's a short guy compared to everybody else. So number one, he's short. Number two, he looks so young. It was like a little kid with a memorized speech who got stuck in a tight spot and just kept repeating it.
Before that in the Florida legislature. I will say, if politics becomes and the presidency becomes about electing the people who have been in Congress or in the Senate the longest, we should all rally around Joe Biden. He's been around 1,000 years. He's passed hundreds of bills. And I don't think any of us believe Joe Biden should be president of the United States. And let's dispel once and for all with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Barack Obama is undertaking a systematic effort to change this country, to make America more like the rest of the world. That's why he passed Obamacare and the stimulus and Dodd-Frank and a deal with Iran. It is a systematic effort to change America. When I'm president of the United States, we are going to re-embrace all the things that made America the greatest nation in the world, and we are going to leave our children what they deserve, the single greatest nation in the history of the world.
Senator Rubio, thank you.
All right, you probably heard Rubio say something like that before, right? Well, check this out. Check out how Chris Christie interacts with this.
And experience and questions about you being a first-term senator. Governor Christie warning voters here in New Hampshire against voting for another first-term senator as America did with Barack Obama in 2008, arguing that you are, quote, not ready to be president of the United States. And Senator Santorum, who we all know dropped out of the race just this week and endorsed you, passed on national television listing your accomplishments as senator. Tonight, what are your accomplishments in the Senate that demonstrate you're ready to be president of the United States?
Well, let me say, from protecting the people of Florida from eminent domain abuse, to bringing accountability to the VA, to the Girls Count Act, to sanctioning terrorist groups, I'm proud of my service in the United States Senate and before that in the Florida legislature. I will say, if politics becomes and the presidency becomes about electing the people who have been in Congress or in the Senate the longest, we should all rally around Joe Biden. He's been around 1,000 years. He's passed hundreds of bills. And I don't think any of us believe Joe Biden should be president of the United States.
What is interesting here, if you listen, is how Marco Rubio randomly inserts these slams against the president, which I think are the result of poll testing the Republican base to see what they find most disagreeable about with Obama. Which brings up the question also, are the things that Obama does that people disagree with on the right, are they done on purpose or an accident? But anyway, this interaction with Chris Christie is absolutely astounding. Check it out.
And let's dispel once and for all with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Barack Obama is undertaking a systematic effort to change this country, to make America more like the rest of the world. That's why he passed Obamacare and the stimulus and Dodd-Frank and a deal with Iran. It is a systematic effort to change America. When I'm president of the United States, we are going to re-embrace all the things that made America the greatest nation in the world, and we are going to leave our children what they deserve, the single greatest nation in the history of the world.
Senator Rubio, thank you. I do want to ask Governor Christie. Governor Christie, you said, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. When it comes to electing a first-term senator, you heard Senator Rubio make the case that he does have the experience. Your response?
Sure. First, let's remember something. Every morning when he...
Let's take a little break here. We're going to come back and listen to this response. It is... absolutely epic, but we need to take a break here first. Chris Christie's response to Marco Rubio's speech, which he repeated somewhere between 4 and 8 times. One person had counted 8 different times that he referenced this little mini speech that he's memorized. Amazing. We'll be right back at 6:45. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450. Well, just to let you know, before we get to this Christie response, Rubio, the Iranians now have a large mystery construction site at Iran at their top secret military site, and they've now replaced the dollar with the euro in oil sales. So, you know, we were just... been treated disgracefully over this Iran situation. It's astounding. The type of things that Obama is going to do before he leaves office just makes you shudder. Anyway, here's Chris Christie's response to Marco Rubio.
Sure. First, let's remember something. Every morning when a United States senator wakes up, they think about what kind of speech can I give or what kind of bill can I drop. Every morning when I wake up, I think about what kind of problem do I need to solve for the people who actually elected me. It's a different experience. It's a much different experience. And the fact is, Marco, you shouldn't compare yourself to Joe Biden, and you shouldn't say that that's what we're doing. Here's exactly what we're doing. You have not been involved in a consequential decision where you had to be held accountable. You just simply haven't. And the fact is... the fact is, when we talk about Hezbollah Sanctions Act that you list as one of your accomplishments and just did, you weren't even there to vote for it. That's not leadership. That's truancy. The fact is that what we need to have in this country is not to make the same mistake we made 8 years ago. Fact is, it does matter when you have to make decisions to be held accountable for them. It does matter when the challenges don't come on a list of a piece of paper of what to vote yes or no every day. But when the problems come in from the people that you serve, I like Marco Rubio, and he's a smart person and a good guy. But he simply does not have the experience to be president of the United States and make these decisions. We've watched it happen, everybody. For the last 7 years, the people of New Hampshire are smart. Do not make the same mistake again.
If I may respond, I was meant to reveal.
I think the experience is not just what you did, but how it worked out. Under Chris Christie's governorship of New Jersey, they've been downgraded 9 times in their credit rating. This country already has a debt problem. We don't need to add to it by electing someone who has experience at running up and destroying the credit rating of the state. But I would add this. Let's dispel with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. He is trying to change this country. He wants America to become more like the rest of the world. We don't want to be like the rest of the world. We want to be the United States of America. And when I'm elected president, this will become once again the single greatest nation in the history of the world, not the disaster Barack Obama has imposed upon us.
Senator Rubio, thank you. I do want to bring in Governor Bush on this.
Hold on,
because you
second.
Made this.
Excuse me.
If you'd like to respond, you can
get a chance to respond. You see, everybody, I want the people at home to think about this. That's what Washington, D.C. does. The drive-by shot at the beginning with incorrect and incomplete information, and then the memorized 25-second speech that is exactly what his advisor gave.
See, Marco, the thing is this. When you're president of the United States, when you're a governor of a state, the memorized 30-second speech where you talk about how great America is at the end of it doesn't solve one problem for one person. They expect you to plow the snow. They expect you to get the schools open. And when the worst natural disaster in your state, they expect you to rebuild their state, which is what I've done. None of that stuff happens on the floor of the United States Senate. It's a fine job. I'm glad you ran for it. But it does not prepare you for presidents of the United States.
Chris, your state got hit by a massive snowstorm 2 weeks ago. You didn't even want to go back. They had to shame you into going back. And then you stayed there for 36 hours. And then he left and came back to campaign.
See,
those are the facts. Here's the bottom line. This notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing is just not
there
true.
It is.
He knows exactly
there it is.
What
he's doing. The memorized 25-second speech.
Oh, that's the reason why this campaign is so important. Because I think this notion, I think this is an important point. We have to understand what we're going through here. We are not facing a president that doesn't know what he's doing. He knows what he is doing. That's why he's done the things he's done.
You know,
that's why we have a president that passed Obamacare and the stimulus. All this damage he's done to America is deliberate. This is a president that's trying to redefine this country. That's why this election is truly a referendum on our identity as a nation, as a people. Our future is at stake. This election is not about the past. It is about what kind of country this is going to be. Someone like Barack Obama, a Hillary Clinton, a Bernie Sanders, or anyone like that, our children are going to be the first Americans to inherit a diminished country that will not have
Governor,
Obama.
Governor Christie,
you know what the shame is, Marco? The shame is that you would actually criticize somebody for showing up to work, plowing the streets, getting the trains run back on time, when you've never been responsible for
Chris,
that in your entire life.
Okay.
All right. So you see, it was just jaw-dropping that Marco Rubio repeated after it's already been called out like 60 seconds before. This is his go-to move. His go-to move is attacking the president, claiming that he's trying to turn us into a European nation, that he's trying to take away Americans' special qualities and such, which I would completely agree with his point, but he repeats it robotically, and it just, I think, proves that he is not ready for the job. Here's a little bit of, you know, you remember the song, Mr. Roboto. What is wrong with this guy? You can't support Rubio. He's a robot. He's a lovable squeeze toy GOP robot, folks. We'll be right back. 6:53 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450. You can criticize me, but you can't claim I'm a robot. We'll be right back. there's a little bit of reaction to the Rubio robotic repeat.
But I'm a contrarian on Rubio. He won all of that debate except those 3 minutes back, but he had a terrific second half. And I think he'll get the bronze come Tuesday night.
Wow, Chris. Well, that's good, except the only problem you have is the videotape. And it exists.
The 3 minutes.
And it's
all right.
A strange moment.
Well, let me pause. Let's play the videotape. Look at this thing. It is rough. Take a listen.
So there's a lot of people that are writing Rubio off because it was so bizarre. And you can't blame him. I mean, to come out with something like that is... I mean, it really it causes you to question where the person is coming from and how much of a, you know, like poll tested and trained candidate without their own thoughts. We know that Rubio is fairly liberal because he was involved in the Gang of Eight attempt to naturalize all of the illegals or some large portion. And you just can't get away from that. But I got a little bit of, to lighten it up for you, a little bit of comedy on men and women's approach to engagements.
Men and women treat engagement different too, you know? You know this? You know? I remember I asked her, do you want to get married? She got excited. It was like, oh my God, yeah. I'm going to tell all my friends since I knew since the first day. I told my friends we're going to get married. They treated like somebody died. Hey, did you hear about Sean? No. Get married.
All right, so we will take a break here on the hour, but I think that Marco Rubio has really damaged himself very badly, and he looked ridiculous, and he kept it up. He mentions the same thing. He's like, somebody who gets nervous and keeps repeating themselves, only he did it on a national stage trying to run for president. It really looked creepy to me. 659 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE 523 1450. We'll come back and dig into some of the other candidates.
I've seen a bright light from Memphis and the Commodore Hotel. And underneath the street lamp, I met a Southern Belle. So well, if you be my Texas chicken,
It's 7:06. It's the 8th day of February. Valentine's Day is coming up. A day of celebration or rank depression, depending on your status, I guess. Or it could be an opportunity for you. Speaking of Valentine's, I was curious about Cam Newton's girlfriend because he wore this shirt in which it showed him doing the dab, which is a little dance move, and a little kid doing the dab. It was kind of father and son shirt. His girlfriend is named Kia, goes by the name Kia, and anyway, I found a comment that was so funny I had to do a little bit more digging into this. I kind of found this out last night. Here's just a couple of pages. One from Black Sports Online: report stripper who Cam Newton saved is pregnant. It didn't say how he saved her, but apparently when she was modeling and stripping, she went by the nickname Hazel. And she used to work, oh, okay, here it is. Hazel used to work at a strip club in D.C., something like the Gentleman's Club or something. I can't remember the name of it. That's where he met her. He saved her. But here's another page that says, Cam Newton being forced into engagement. And this is from TerezOwens.com. We broke the news. Cam Newton's going to be a father now. Quote, he's going to have to be married as well. Quote, Cam will be forced into an engagement by her soon. She planned this. She is a gold digger. Hazel was waiting for the big money contract. She knows his parents don't believe in kids out of wedlock. So Cam Newton's dad is a pastor. So anyway, attractive young lady, but I guess they've been dating 3 years, but they haven't gotten married yet. Maybe they're not going to. But one of the hilarious comments that I found when I was looking at these stories, was that this, you can see where these people were posting their comments from. So some girl from Columbia University, which is obviously part of the Ivy League, New York City, a girl who commented on Cam's girlfriend wrote, quote, damn, strippers get all the best guys. Lucky Kia, Cam is such a catch. I laughed so hard when I read that. Strippers get all the best guys. All right. My advice to you is, even though it's Valentine's Day, don't date a stripper. Fortunately, the Bronx never opened around here, so you may not have to make that excruciating decision. But here is just a little bit more analysis on Rubio. Rubio is in free fall. As a matter of fact, the pollster for John Kasich said a rock, the trajectory of a falling rock has nothing on Marco Rubio. He's really been hit hard by this. You know, Marco Rubio got up and they interviewed him and he said, this is what I really believe, but that doesn't really deal with the issue here, which is, are you a robot who was programmed by GOP Central Command to come out and take out Trump and Cruz? Check this out.
Let's dispel with this fiction that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. Anyone who believes that Barack Obama isn't doing what he's doing on purpose doesn't understand what we're dealing with here.
Democrats already circulating that video from last night. Senator Marco Rubio joins us live right now. What went wrong?
Well, actually, I would pay them to keep running that quick clip, because that's what I believe passionately. It's one of the reasons why I'm not running for re-election to the Senate and I'm running for president. This notion and this idea that somehow all this is an accident. Obamacare was not an accident. Dodd-Frank was not an accident. The deal with Iran was not an accident.
But you're getting pounded for repeating that speech.
Well, look, we raised more money last night in the first hour of that debate than any other debate. As far as that message, I hope they keep running it. And I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. Barack Obama, yes, has he hired incompetent people to implement laws and run agencies? Absolutely. What he's trying to do to America It's part of a plan.
But even
he has said he wanted to change the country. He's doing it in a way that is robbing us of everything that makes us special. I'm going to keep saying that because that not only is it the truth, it is at the core of our campaign.
But even after Chris Christie called you up for what he called canned speeches, 25-second canned speeches, you repeated again. He says, there you go again. That was not a good moment for you, was it?
It's what I believe, and it's what I'm going to continue to say because it happens to be one of the main reasons why I am running. This is the grip in the history of mankind because of a certain set of principles. Barack Obama wants us to abandon those principles, and he has spent 7 years putting in place policies that rip them from us, undermining the Constitution, undermining free enterprise, undermining our standing in the world, weakening America, apologizing for us on the global stage. The reason why I'm running is if we elect someone like that for the next 4 years, I think it may be too late.
Look, even if what he is saying is true, I have no idea what Marco Rubio believes, you know? Just like you don't. All you can go off is whatever information you can glean, but I mean the fact that he did that repeatedly makes him seem inauthentic. That's why, you know, when I think I mentioned that I was a debate professor, professor of rhetoric, you know, when I was living in Miami, and one of the things that I taught my class was that my students was that, you know, it's better to not memorize your speech because number one, there's always the chance that you can forget it under the hot lights that you're going to forget your speech. But number two, memorized speech doesn't sound authentic. It's canned, you know? And so that's the problem with Rubio. You keep repeating the same thing. He's already done some things that are very liberal, which makes people wonder about his. It makes him seem overly ambitious that he's suddenly been caught spitting out this canned soundbite. It's very weird. Here's a little more analysis on that.
Let's get some thoughts now on tonight's debate from syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. He joins us now from Washington. Charles, your thoughts.
It was one of those rare debates where the outline and the conclusion, I think, is rather obvious. There's not a lot of ambiguity. The winners were the three governors, for sure, the ones with the most way behind who had to gain. Particularly, I thought, Kasich. He made his cases perfectly pitched for New Hampshire, of the guy who can appeal to independents to reach across the aisle, who's a moderate, a bit like the Obama appeal of 2008. I thought he was the most effective. Bush had his best night. Had a good night presenting his own case, but also he nailed Trump on the eminent domain. He took him on, number one. And second, I think he really landed a blow. Although, as always, he didn't quite have the knockout in the end. The third was of course, Christie with that electric moment. You know, the one was, there it is, which reminded me of President Reagan when he ran against Carter. He had that electric moment in one debate where he said, there you go again, and the presidency election was over right there. And that, I think, it really hurt Rubio. I'm not sure how much it helps Christie, but he did show himself rather well. Of the others, interestingly, I thought that Trump and Cruz didn't hurt themselves very much, but didn't help themselves. Each of them had fairly rocky nights. I thought Trump on the defensive and the way he was kind of nasty with Bush in saying, you know, attempting to shush him. Cruz, interestingly, retreated when he was offered a chance to hit or repeat his hit on Trump about personality and temperament. He shied away. He refused to pick it up. Of course, the moment that people are going to remember is Rubio, who I agree, I think it's Steve who pointed out, he had a very strong debate other than that. But unfortunately for Rubio, that moment is the one that's going to be remembered. So I think overall
that
had clear. Yes.
That moment plus the walkout. That was that will definitely be remembered at the top of the show,
yeah.
I think. But finish your thought about Rubio. Will it hurt him so much here that it affects Tuesday significantly?
I think it will. I think this was a moment when he could have really put away the field. He's had this great momentum. I think this is likely to put something of a break on his momentum. Look, we were at a point where you were getting one establishment figure. Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, endorsing him. Other governors who dropped out of the race endorsing him. Where he could have just started running the table. This, I think, is going to hurt. What's amazing to me is that he must have known that this was coming. He knew the outline. He knew the content of the attack. His strategy obviously was don't return fire at Christie. Just talk about Obama. That's always a popular thing to do. But you don't do it when you've been accused of repeating yourself and giving a canned statement. And there were easy ways he could have answered that question. There's a way to say, I have the most experience on intelligence, foreign affairs. He didn't do it. I think this is going to be the lasting impression of this debate.
I don't think that Rubio's got a chance now. He's going to be brought up over and over again, because people are going to claim that when you tap down, when you get into who Rubio really is, that's who he is. And that there isn't any more Rubio than this little canned speech that the GOP leadership came up with, and his pollsters said that, you know, this is going to play well. So it is attractive that Rubio doesn't fight back. Although he didn't fight back pretty hard against Christie, but the sense is that he's bought and paid for by the establishment. He is not a true conservative. He's already proved that in the Gang of Eight attempt to debacle, the attempt to bring over the naturalize the legalize the illegals, and now this is going to be a lasting sense that he is someone that is pre-programmed and doesn't have a mind of his own. Here's a little bit from Trump attacking Jeb Bush.
Okay, 30 seconds. Well, let me just, you know, he wants to be a tough guy. A lot of times, you'll have, and it doesn't work very well.
How tough is it to take a times, property from an elderly woman?
Let me talk quiet. How a tough lot of it? Times.
The debate here was over the eminent domain, which is the way that land is taken away from private citizens, either by the government or other private citizens or companies, usually to build something. And so Bush has said that Trump took or tried to take a house away from an old lady in New Jersey, in Atlantic City, so that they could build a casino, something like that. So here's the response.
That's all of his donors and special interests out there. So, what it is, that's what, and by the way, let me just tell you, we need the tickets. You can't get them. You know who has the tickets for the, I'm talking about to the television audience? Donors, special interests, the people that are putting up the money. So it is. The RNC told us we have all donors in the audience, and the reason they're not loving me, the reason they're not loving me is I don't want their money. I'm going to do the right thing for the American public. I don't want their money. I don't need their money. And I'm the only one up here that can say that. Eminent domain.
All right. Here's a little bit more on this issue. With Trump claims he was only given 20 tickets, which I find mind-boggling, to this debate.
Trump, not the public, stood to benefit from the proposed seizures, and that the deal was analogous to giving Trump a blank check with respect to future development on the property for casino hotel purposes.
Good. And you know what I did? I let the court stand as opposed to going higher up, which I could have done.
Supreme Court.
We could have gone higher, but let me just tell you, George, I decided not to do it. I decided not to pursue it. We could have gone a different way. Doesn't matter. We could have gone a different way. I offered her a lot of money. She ended up selling the house for much less money than I offered her. Eminent domain is a very important thing. Jeb Bush doesn't understand what it means. And if you look into the Bush family, I found this out five minutes ago. They used eminent domain for the stadium in Texas where they owned, I guess, a piece of the Texas Rangers.
That was George W. Bush.
It doesn't matter. It was the Bush family. They used private eminent domain. He didn't tell anybody this. So, I mean, he should have told people. Maybe he probably doesn't know, because I don't even think he knows what eminent domain is. But I just found that out 5 minutes ago.
So no second thoughts about your position at all?
Eminent domain is important.
You wouldn't have highways, you wouldn't have roadways, you wouldn't have bridges, you wouldn't have hospitals, you wouldn't have anything without it. The Keystone Pipeline, everybody wants the Keystone Pipeline. If you're a conservative, you want the Keystone Pipeline. They have a whole section on eminent domain where they write up, you know, the whole thing on the Keystone. They have a whole section right now.
Crowd wasn't on your side.
The crowd was on my side, except they were all friends of mine that were donors and special interests and lobbyists, some of whom worked for me in the past. It was actually, it was a very, it shows how broken the system is. The people in that audience were the people that were supporting all of the candidates. I'm the only candidate not taking money. I'm not taking
any
money.
You had no supporters in the crowd?
Well, I had supporters. I had 20 tickets. I mean, they give me 20 tickets. Hey, George, all of those people in that crowd, 90% of them were people that gave to the various candidates and mostly to Bush. Look, Bush got $128 million. He's nowhere. He spent over $100 million on this failed campaign of his, and he's nowhere. Those people were in the audience. So every time anybody said anything, in fact, Rubio actually said, he said, why does nobody get any response but Bush? I just think it's really showing the system. When you have somebody like me, where I don't take money, where I'm a self-funder, people really appreciate that, and that's why I brought it out last night. It was a good point, I think, but I brought it out.
Issue of water.
All right. So anyway, we'll just take a little break here and come back. I've got a few more comments from Trump, and then we're going to get into Cruz. Cruz is still backpedaling, and Cruz is still trying to recover from the fact that he gave out information that Ben Carson was leaving the race, which was false. And I want to repeat this. I'm not a real I told you so kind of a guy, but if you recall when Donna called up and she was so caught up in the Cruz bubble, you know, Cruz isn't a politician, he's a statesman. He memorized the Constitution when he was 13, blah, blah, blah. And I said, be careful, because these are human beings and you don't want to turn this guy into a prophet. You don't want to claim that he is, you know, these are, be careful. These guys are politicians and you're turning him into somebody more than he is. And almost immediately within the next few days, it turns out that Cruz did a real dirty trick. And I don't hear Donna calling up and defending him. These are all ambitious men trying to make it to the top. Some are probably more talented and more virtuous than others, but they're all just human beings. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell, 723. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450. We will be back to dig into a little more Trump. It's 7:26, the 8th day of February. It's about 35 degrees outside. It's pretty nice. Shocking poll. Newly released info, Sanders and Clinton in dead heat nationally. Now, you might ask yourself, well, will the Democrats really support socialism? And as a matter of fact, 43% of Democrats polled do support socialism. So that answers that one. Now, here's some more information. Personally, don't think that the country as a whole is ready for socialism. And they say that Sanders is even farther to the left than people realize right now. So, all right, here is something else that Trump said that was a little bit controversial. It's a typical thing that said by Trump. It sounds controversial when somebody else says it, but for some reason people accept it when he says it. Check this out.
Mr. Trump, if Senator Cruz is known for opposing deals,
You literally wrote the book on making them. Senator Cruz has mentioned that on the trail. What would you say to those conservatives who are concerned that a deal maker will just perpetuate the same deals in Washington and the way that things run now? How do you disturb
that?
No,
a good deal maker will make great deals, but will do it the way our founders thought it should be done. People get together, they make deals. Ronald Reagan did it with Tip O'Neill very successfully. You didn't hear so much about executive orders if you heard about it at all. You have to be able to get a consensus. Now, the real person, like it was mentioned about the deal with Iran, how bad a deal is that? It doesn't get any more amateurish than that. A good deal maker would never make a deal like that. With Congress, you have to get everybody in a room. And you have to get them to agree. But you have to get them to agree what you want. And that's part of being here. You can't leave the White House, go to Hawaii and play golf for 3 weeks and be a real deal maker. It doesn't work that way. You have to get people in, grab them, hug them, kiss them, and get the deal done. But it's got to be the deal that you want.
Governor Kasich.
All right. That's what he was saying about deals. Now, he said this clip is mistitled, but I've got another clip of him talking about waterboarding. I'll see if I can find that. It was kind of interesting, and it was all right. So here is the Donald from CNN going to talk about his commitment to use waterboarding in just a second. But Trump had a pretty good debate. He seemed a little bit snarky. I mean, I guess he always does, but he seemed a little bit off his game. I was wondering how he would act in front of everybody after losing Iowa the way that he did. But, you know, frankly, he seems to have kind of kept his stride. He didn't seem quite as energetic, but a lot of the debate was off of him. All right. Well, this isn't from the debate, but this is him talking about it.
I want to follow up on a question and answer from last night. You said, quote, I would bring back waterboarding and I would bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding. Now, as I understand it, the law as amended in 2006 bans treatment of a captured enemy that causes, quote, serious and non-transitory mental harm, which need not be prolonged. It calls it cruel and inhumane, and it makes it punishable as a war crime, and this includes waterboarding, according to the authors of the act. How would you bring it back if it is currently a war crime under U.S. law?
Well, I'd go through a process and get it declassified, frankly, and I would certainly waterboarding at a minimum. The chopping off heads of Christians and many other people in the Middle East. They're chopping heads off. They laugh at us when they hear that we're not going to approve waterboarding, and then they'll have a James Foley and others where they cut off their heads. And, you know, you can say what you want. I have no doubt that it does work in terms of information and other things, and maybe not always, but nothing works always. But I have no doubt that it works. But more importantly, when they're chopping off the heads of people, and innocent people in most cases, beyond waterboarding is fine with me.
All right. So he's in favor of waterboarding. And I'm just trying to see if I can find this clip here where he actually says it during the debate. And I think I've got it right here. So here's Trump on waterboarding. Actually, hold on just a second here. Here's the issue of waterboarding brought up in the debate.
Mr. Trump, you said not only does it work, but that you'd bring it back.
Well, I'll tell you what. In the Middle East, we have people chopping the heads off Christians. We have people chopping the heads off many other people. We have things that we have never seen before as a group. We have never seen before what's happening right now. The medieval times, I mean, we studied medieval times. Not since medieval times have people seen what's going on. I would bring back waterboarding, and I'd bring back a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
All right, and we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Jim.
Jim, what's up?
Kelly, I think that Trump could have missed an opportunity there. It's a well-known fact that I think our SEALs and some of us other type of elite units undergo waterboarding as part of their training. So if that's the case, then we must be torturing our own people.
Well, he might not be aware of it, but that is a good point. I think waterboarding is just sticking, you know, it's putting a board underneath your nose and then when you're laying down and then pouring water down the board so it goes up your nose. I don't think it is what most people would have traditionally thought of as torture until a few years ago when it became a big deal. And then by that time, the you know, its brand of waterboarding was kind of ruined because of all the media, but it isn't what people normally define as torture.
Well, yeah, and it's also a talking point that the liberals will use to show that we are the bad people in the world, that nobody else does this, but Trump's got it right. You may not waterboard anybody, but you can go ahead and put them in cages over there and drown them, or you can burn them alive, or you can chop their heads off, or you can torture them. That's okay, but not for us to get waterboarding. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. All right, Jim, thanks for the call. All right, folks, we'll take a little break here, and we will come back. And, well, I think I might have a little comedy for you. Get a little clip here for you. Yeah, so waterboarding, it didn't seem that bad to me. Of course, I've never been waterboarded, but it just seems to me like it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, I mean, I guess these people are always trying to update human rights and stuff, but it just seems somewhat ridiculous. And here is a really weird name for a comedian. And hold on just a second.
And 45 minutes later.
Pardon me. Kind of queuing up my stuff on the Cruiser. But we'll be right back. 735 Kelly O'Connell, 736 on the button. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523, 1450. We'll be right back.
My name is Zoltan. I get a lot of good.
There was a really superb moment by Trump that had to do with the Cruz situation in Iowa, and I wanted to play it for you here real quick. I say it's superb. What I mean is that he really took advantage of the situation. Check this out.
But I stood and said we should have no mandates, a level playing field, and the people of Iowa put country and our children above the cronyism and corporate welfare. We can turn this country around if we get back to the Constitution, and I will always stand with the American people against the bipartisan corruption of Washington. Thank you.
Mr. Trump.
That's because he got Ben Carson's votes, by the way, but we won't say. Our country that we love so much doesn't win anymore. We don't win with the military. We don't win on the border. You look at New Hampshire with the tremendous problem we have with heroin. Number one thing I hear from the people of New Hampshire who I love and develop such relationships. We don't win with health care. We don't win with trade. You look at what other countries are doing to us, China, everyone. They're killing us on trade. If I'm elected president, we will win and we will win and we will win. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. That was his closing statement. But the cheap shot, I guess it wasn't a cheap shot on Cruz, because the Cruz campaign, whether you want to blame him for it or not, I'm sure Donna doesn't want to blame him for anything, but Cruz, he's the head of his own campaign, you know. Is it such a stretch to think that he heard that Carson was taking a break and just jumped to the conclusion that he was leaving and decided to get it out when it would affect the vote? I don't think it's that much of a stretch. Here's the interaction from the debate.
When this transpired, I apologized to him then, and I do so now. Ben, I'm sorry. Let me tell you the facts of what occurred for those who are interested in knowing. On Monday night, about 6:30 p.m., CNN reported that Ben was not going from Iowa to New Hampshire or South Carolina. Rather, he was, quote, taking a break from campaigning.
This is what was tweeted shortly before the caucuses opened that evening about Ben Carson's travel plans by R. Chris Moody. He tweeted, Ben Carson will likely speak at his victory party in Iowa before caucus results are in so he can catch a flight.
All right, just to let you know, CNN is where Cruz said he got the information from. Now CNN is defending itself.
They reported that on television. CNN's political anchors.
Yes, our on-air people came on and they talked about this. They said it's an unusual move by Ben Carson or any presidential candidate to not go directly on to New Hampshire. But again, in no way, shape, or form did they say that Ben Carson was dropping out of the race.
Jake Tapper and Dana Bash and Wolf Blitzer said it was highly unusual and highly significant.
At no time did CNN say that Ben Carson was dropping out of this race, not online, not on air, not anywhere.
My political team saw CNN's report breaking news, and they forwarded that news to our volunteers. It was being covered on live television.
All right, so the person who I think ultimately did this release for the Cruz campaign is some guy named Dan Gabriel, the former CIA agent that I told you about. So, anyway, that is what happened. And you know what? I don't think Cruz is the worst guy, but it just kind of makes me keep thinking back to the conversation that I had with Donna, in which, you know, I just pointed out to her, let's remember these are all human beings, you know, they're all politicians. You know, none of us know any of these people well enough to say they're not a politician, they're a statesman, and that they're above criticism, you know? All right, here's that. We'll take a break at 7:44, but here's that comedy clip I was telling you about. Sometimes things get stuck. You're listening to AM Massachusetts on 1450 KOBE with Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450. We'll be right back.
My name is Zoltan. I get a lot of garbage for that name because people think that's a stage name that I came up with. It is not. It's not. My mom knowingly and soberly named me Zoltan, you guys. That's real talk. That's what I got to deal with. I'm not even sure why she did it. To be honest with you, I think she did it because she wanted to mess up my career options. So let's think about it. There's not a whole lot of jobs out there for a dude named Zoltan. There isn't. It was either stand-up comic or wizard.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, it's Ole.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, what you doing?
We're about to...
I was just calling.
We're about to
talk a little bit about Donald Trump.
Yeah, hold on. We're just about on the air. Hold on. It's 7:47 and we're flying the friendly skies. And we've got O on. O is calling about Trump. Go ahead, O.
Well, you know, everybody badging him. I know he badged the Mexican community and everything. But if anybody's going to bring any kind of money into this nation, I would say it'd be Donald Trump.
All right. How's he going to do it?
Well, I don't know. Duplo's how to make money. You know, I mean, he should probably be able to figure out a way. I mean, Duplo's how to make money. And that's one thing we're lacking of is we're losing lots of money. I mean, with all these trades, we're trading off with everybody all overseas, Mexico, other countries, and we're not doing nothing out of here.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. So do you think that the country's ready for a socialist with Bernie Sanders?
You know, fortunately, I think we really do need one. As much as I hate the guy, I think he'd do good for our country.
But doesn't that go against Trump's capitalism?
It does, and somewhat. But the only way I could think of is trying to get this nation out of debt. Because, I mean, how far in debt are we with China?
$1 trillion, from what I understand.
If not more, you know? So, I mean, we need to figure out something. Because in order for this nation to prosper, we need to get out of owing all these other nations money.
I agree. Thanks for the call, O. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right,
bye.
All right, folks. That, a call from O. So, all right. So let's see what else there is here. Yeah. 42% of Dems favor socialism. They say it's losing its sting. Another story here for you. Hillary has developed a shocking inability to persuade women. A lot of young women are looking at her and saying she's not a socialist. She is a socialist. She's not a feminist. She's not my kind of feminist. Let's come back and talk about that a little bit. Kelly O'Connell, 750. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. And we've got New Hampshire, the vote in just a day. All right, we just got a few minutes left here, and the article is in the Washington Post about Hillary not being able to persuade her sister Democrats, and they're saying on the eve of the New Hampshire primary, in her quest to become the first female female president, she's encountered an, quote, unexpected problem. She's having trouble persuading, quote, women young and old to rally behind her. And the latest sign of this came Sunday when Senator Bernie Sanders beat Clinton among women by 8 percentage points. This is a huge shift from the results, in the last Iowa caucus, where she beat them by 11. So why is it that she's losing the female vote when she's trying to become the first female president? And not only that, she says that basically she can't be part of the establishment because she's a female. Now, Gloria Steinem, who the very famous feminist leader, said the boys are with Bernie and that women are following Bernie because they're out looking for guys. And then Miss Albright, the former Secretary of State, says there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other. Which I find a somewhat bizarre statement. And that's the problem with identity politics, is you get more caught up in the group that you're supposed to be committed to, as opposed to what they stand for, what they're up to. And so Clinton is calling on a group of female senators that she calls the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pantsuits. And so she's got these women out there trying to shame other women into supporting her. And it's, if she can't get this group of people, how can she get elected, you know? And so anyway, she's seems to be in a lot of trouble. And there is been some information that's been put out there that there is a battle in the FBI to indict her and put a grand jury together. And the feeling is that the head of the Justice Department, Lynch, is not going to cooperate. Now people want Lynch to be set aside. In the meantime, they're still focusing on Bill Clinton's abusive past. And Kathleen Willey, who is a woman who said that Bill Clinton made a pass at her, she's leading the campaign against Hillary. And they're confronting or trying to confront Bill Clinton on his history of abuse every single day. So in the meantime, whether you have been updated on this or not, they know that there were a series of unusual events that occurred during the Democratic vote counting in Iowa, to the extent where some people believe that the vote was thrown. It came down to almost a statistical tie, pretty much a statistical tie with just a few votes different. And for example, and yet Sanders appears to have won. An example for you, there was one caucus where only one person took part, and the person voted for Sanders, and yet the caucus was thrown towards Hillary. We know that there were at least six caucuses where the vote was decided by the flip of a coin, then Hillary won all of them. And if you split the votes down the middle on those, which would probably be the fair thing to do, Hillary loses. So if she loses that, then you're left with possibly this socialist as the last man standing, the last person standing. And then that explains why there are frantic attempts to draft Joe Biden, the multi-billionaire Michael Bloomberg, and others. In the same way, the GOP is panicking because their little trained bear, Marco the robot Rubio, he's screwing up. He gets called out for using a robotic speech, a little 30-second soundbite speech, and instead of sticking it in his pocket, he uses it again three more times to the point where he sounds like a character of a candidate. Well, anyway, we'll get into a lot more stuff tomorrow. I was trying to get into both the Super Bowl, hats off to the Broncos, and into the debate. We'll come back and do it again tomorrow. Have a great day. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell. And we'll catch you on the flip side tomorrow. Have a great day. Ciao.
We got one.